He kept walking and talking as I followed one step behind, mesmerized by the thousands of orange diode stock quotes that came skidding across gray-colored computer monitors. At the front of the room, a wall of plate glass looked out over Midtown Manhattan. Up ahead, I could see the Empire State Building. It towered above everything, seeming to rise up to the heavens and scrape the sky. It was a sight to behold, a sight worthy of a young master of the universe, and right now, that goal seemed further and further away.
"To tell you the truth," sputtered Scott, "I don't think you're cut out for this job. You look like a kid, and Wall Street's no place for kids. It's a place for killers, a place for mercenaries. So in that sense, you're lucky I'm not the one who does the hiring around here."
He let out a few ironic chuckles. I bit my lip and said nothing. The year was 1987, and yuppie assholes like Scott seemed to rule the world. Wall Street was in the midst of a raging bull market, and freshly minted millionaires were being spit out a dime a dozen. Money was cheap, and a guy named Michael Milken had invented something called junk bonds, which had changed the way corporate America went about its business. It was a time of unbridled greed, a time of wanton excess. It was the era of the yuppie.
My first impression of Cassius Clay, author Alex Haley later recalled, was of someone with an incredibly versatile personality. You never knew quite where he was in psychic posture. He was almost like that shell game with a pea and three shells. You know, which shell is the pea under? But he had a belief in himself and convictions far stronger than anybody dreamed he would. As the 1960s grew more tumultuous, Ali became a lightning rod for dissent in America. His message of black pride and black resistance to white domination was on the cutting edge of the era. Not everything he preached was wise, and Ali himself now rejects some of the beliefs that he adhered to then. Indeed, one might find an allegory for his life in a remark he once made to fellow Olympian Ralph Boston.
"I played golf," Ali reported, "and I hit the thing long, but I never knew where it was going."
Sometimes, though, Ali knew precisely where he was going. On the 28th of April, 1967, citing his religious beliefs, he refused induction into the United States Army at the height of the war in Vietnam. Ali's refusal followed a blunt statement, voiced 14 months earlier.
"I ain't got no quarrel with them Viet Cong."
And the American establishment responded with a vengeance, demanding, "Since when did war become a matter of personal quarrels? War is duty. Your country calls, you answer."
How Max Ernest Became Max Ernest. A short story. Max Ernest was a preemie. That is, he was born prematurely, about 6 weeks earlier than expected. Prior to entering the world, his parents hadn't done anything to prepare for his arrival. They had no pram, no crib, no annoying musical toys, no baby wipes, no box of diapers. There were still plenty of pointy, dangerous things around the house, and they had no name for their baby. As the lump of shriveled pink flesh that would become Max Ernest lay in the hospital incubator, like a small chicken, or maybe rabbit, roasting in a glass oven, his parents argued about what to call him. For those of us on the flights, and I am sure I expressed their feelings as well as mine, we were shaken, to say the least, as, per our orders, for such a situation the only sensible thing to do was seek the protection of our air raid shelter, which lay just to the rear of B-Flight Dispersal Hut. All sprint records were, I'm sure, broken in our haste to reach the safety of the shelter. And it is said that fear lends wings to those who need them. I grew a pair very quickly. Bill wasn't thinking anymore. It was blind panic. He sprinted toward the bomb shelter and safety. He was almost there when, through the machine gun fire and the bomb blasts and the sirens and the engines, he heard loud and clear what he described as the stentorian shout of his boss, Flight Sergeant Savage.
"Stand by!"
Savage barked.
"Our aircraft are approaching!"
Bill stopped running. All those hours of drills, of unthinking obedience to orders, had their effect. Another instinct kicked in, one even keener than self-preservation. Duty. The shout, Bill wrote, had the immediate effect of doing away with all the panic and bringing us back to awareness that we had a job to do.